This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
Welcome, everybody, to a new edition of the Orange Bloods podcast. I'm Jeff Ketchum, owner, publisher, writer. I do things over at orangebloods.com. Good to be chatting with you today here on the Yak. Where do we begin today? I guess, first of all, shout out to the Texas Tech men's basketball team. It's a weird sore subject in University of Texas circles, in part because they covet Chris Beard. They want Chris Beard. They're dissatisfied, Texas fans are, with Shaka Smart, to the point that they've been lusting. Like, they are thirsty. They're lusting for Chris Beard, deservedly so. He's been just a revelation the last 2 years in Lubbock, and his team, I think, deserves a shout out. Before we get into Texas spring football and talk about all of those things that most of this podcast will be centered around, again, shout out to Texas Tech. Man, that team had some balls on it. Just gutsy for days. And to have had the national championship in your grasp, up three, 13 seconds to go, as that game-tying shot takes flight. The reality is, if that shot misses, and it's what, 50-50 at best? More like 40-60 to make it. If that shot misses, Tech gets the rebound, they've won a national championship. Now, I know it would be probably the unwise thing to do to count out Virginia in a situation where Tech gets the rebound, gets fouled, goes to shoot free throws, goes up, let's say either four or five. I realize that Virginia escaped death like they were in a movie. What was the movie? Oh, God, I'm having a hard time. Final Destination. It's like Virginia was in Final Destination. And they just, the Grim Reaper couldn't find them. Auburn had them out. Didn't matter. Purdue had them out. Didn't matter. They just found a way to win. And I give Virginia a lot of credit, but that Texas Tech team gets to be remembered as, well, look, let's start here. I believe the textbook definition of a generation is 33 years. That Texas Tech team is arguably the best team from the state of Texas in the last 33 years. It's probably either that team or the Texas 02-03 team that went to the Final Four. They didn't win a national championship, either of those teams. But for Tech to make it to the national championship game is a marker moment in the history of college basketball in the state of Texas. It has been since 1983 since that has happened. That feels notable. So, you know, Jarrett Culver, who for some reason I twice listed as Culver. I want him to be Culver, apparently. Jarrett Culver mentioned, I guess, that he grew up being a Texas basketball fan before going to Texas Tech. I'm guessing that when he was a kid, some of the first teams, well, maybe he was too old or too young to see that Texas. God, think about it. We're at a point now where seniors in high school were 1 or 2 years old when TJ Ford was playing college basketball. God, that makes me feel old. The high school seniors are running around right now, and most of them probably don't even remember watching Kevin Durant. They'd only been six. So what Texas Tech did last night was really big, because there are kids all over the state of Texas that have never seen a college basketball team from the state of Texas be worth a shit. Never make it. Forget about Final Four. We haven't seen a lot of Elite Eights. We haven't seen a ton of Sweet 16s. So it's easy, I think, to look at what Texas Tech didn't do last night. They didn't finish the deal, but I do tip my cap to them, because what they did accomplish is pretty rare around these parts. And it does put us into a position where we do things like, hey, which was better, that 02-03 Texas team or this 18-19 Tech team? It's close. It's close. I think I lean towards Texas because Texas, as I wrote in my 10 thoughts from the weekend over at orangebloods.com on Sunday, in a battle, in a hypothetical battle between those two teams, TJ Ford is the best player on the court. I mean, he was the National Player of the Year in 2003, a sick year in college basketball. And I think in a battle between those two teams, I would probably pick TJ Ford. I can't help, you know, when we think about when that Texas team was defeated in the Final Four, it happened to run into a Syracuse team that just had a better player. TJ Ford would be the best player on the floor in a hypothetical game against this year's Texas Tech team. But the reason Texas didn't make it to a national championship game or to, you know, just beyond Syracuse was that Carmelo Anthony was better than TJ Ford. Like, it happens. And last night, Texas Tech lost that game mostly because at the end of the day, Virginia had the best player on the floor. With all due respect to Jarrett Culver, who was absolutely sensational. Right? I mean, you can't ignore what they did, but you also can't ignore the fact that when we look at what Virginia did, they had a guy get hot and score 27 points in the second half and in overtime, and they had the best player on the floor that night. And it is the difference between Texas Tech being a champion today and simply being the best team or one of the two best teams in the last 33 years, a generation of college basketball in the state of Texas. They still accomplished a lot. That's a major accomplishment. If I told Chris Beard before the season started that when this thing was over with, your team would arguably be the best team, college basketball team from the state of Texas in a generation, like in a textbook definition of generation, not like one of these half-assed generations that are like 15 to 18 years. I'm talking 33 years. Probably wouldn't have believed it, or he would have taken it and said, I ask no questions. Give it to me. I'll take it. Phenomenal run. Fascinated to see what happens with Beard moving forward. It's a new day, though, in college basketball, where Virginia is a champion and Texas Tech is. I saw a joke last night that if those two teams had played each other in December, that game would have been on ESPNU at like 6 o'clock. It's so true. Not anymore, though. Not anymore. What Virginia was able to do last night was climb themselves up to the mountaintop. They now get to truly be called a big boy program, national program. No more ESPNU games for Virginia. Texas Tech is probably close. Depends on how long Chris Beard sticks around. But they'll get some primetime games next year. You'll see some ESPN, some ESPN2 games. They're going to be on Big Monday more. Their days of, you know, they'll have some ESPNU games. But they won't have any ESPNU games if we get to a place where they're playing Virginia anymore. As it relates to the Texas football team, we now... we're days away from the spring football game. And it's been a fascinating little run in terms of watching this spring. There's less angst. People aren't freaking out about quarterback. The starting quarterback was out for a few days of practice because he was sick. No big deal. Casey Thompson getting more reps than he would have gotten. Like that's, you know, we're at a place with the quarterback position where the backup can go get reps with the first team for a few days, and it's not a stop the presses kind of a moment like, oh my God, Casey Thompson, he's working with the first team. What if he never loses the job? Like, we're not doing that kind of mess. Like, Sam Hellinger is the man. Casey Thompson can have all the first team reps he wants to in practice, barring something significant. Like, it's just better workout stuff for him. And in the process, Rashawn Johnson gets to be on the practice field, and both of those guys are getting more reps now than they would have gotten 4 months ago, 5 months ago. Think about Casey Thompson. Like, I don't know that it can be said enough. Last fall, Casey Thompson was fourth in the pecking order. Sam, Shane, Cameron Rising was ahead of Casey Thompson. So Casey Thompson was in a position where he was getting very few practice. He wasn't getting any second team practice run. Forget about first team. He wasn't getting a ton of second team reps. If there were second team reps that weren't going to Shane Bouchel, they were going mostly to Cameron Rising, which is why Casey Thompson contemplated transferring in the first place. I can't get no practice reps. How the hell am I ever going to get in the game if I can't get practice reps? It's a fair question. I get where Casey Thompson would be coming from in a world where he's the fourth quarterback. And even as the third quarterback, that's not good. Now, one of Cameron Rising and one of Casey Thompson was likely going to stick around because of the transfer of Shane Bouchel. And Casey Thompson sticking around, it's just a brave new world for him. 5 months ago, he couldn't get anything other than reps with the scout team. And even that, he was splitting. This spring, he's getting all of the twos. And on days when Sam Ehlinger had the flu or whatever it was that Sam had that knocked him out for a few days, Casey Thompson's taking reps with the ones. And nobody around here is freaking out about it. When has that happened? It has been a long time. I think we have to go back. Oh, man. I want to say it was the 2008 spring game where I don't think Colt McCoy played in that spring game. And it allowed for John Childs to be the guy with the first team offense. And, you know, even back then, people were kind of freaking out. I think it was 2008. Yes. I had a little note written down because I did my top 10 all-time spring game moments. A lot of people liked it. A few people were like, it's pretty lame to talk about spring game moments, but it's the weekend of spring game. I thought it was interesting to bring up, and, you know, for no other reason than it allows us to think back, like remember back in 2008 when John Childs took first team reps in the spring game with the first team offense, didn't pass the ball at all, but showed some of that athletic skill that made him such a highly coveted prospect, but nobody necessarily freaked out. That was because you had a 2-year returning quarterback. You know, at that point, Colt McCoy going into 2008 had been a 2-year starter, turned the ball over a bunch in 2007, but there was never any thought that he wasn't going to be the starting quarterback. It was about what is his true upside as a starting quarterback, but nobody ever came close to taking his job. And it's probably been since 2008 when a backup quarterback was taking first team reps in a spring game. And there wasn't this feeling of ominous clouds hanging over that, uh-oh, what does it mean? Well, what it means is that Casey Thompson just gets more quality work. And Texas needs that from him because the first 2 years of the Sam Ehlinger era at Texas, I think we've learned that there's a good chance at some point during the year because of the way that Sam plays, Sam will probably miss a game or two. You hope not. But the last two seasons have shown us that Texas needs to have two quarterbacks ready at all times. Casey Thompson's not ready. So all of these reps, if it was me, I would just let Sam sit in the spring game. And I know you can't necessarily do that, but you could justify it. Like, I know Sam would want to play. And I know, you know, it wasn't like the 2005 spring game. Vince Young was sitting on the sidelines. But a lot of that 2005 spring games atmosphere featured a lot of Matt Nordgren, who, by the way, I didn't put this in my top 10 moments, but in the 2005 spring game, Matt Nordgren had a quarterback run, I think of 27 yards, and it counted for 9 points in the spring game. That has to make for an all-time top 10 moment in the history of the Texas spring game, right? The game where Matt Nordgren popped off a near 30-yard run and it counted for 9 points on the scoreboard. That's got to be one of the greatest accomplishments in Texas spring game history. I don't know how I let that, I omitted that from my top 10. Just an oversight on my part. Reminds me of the game in 2005 when Baylor and Texas played. And Texas was up like 70,000-4 or whatever the score was. And Nordgren came into the game and bounced. He dribbled the basketball down the field. It's one of my favorite plays in school history. I can't remember if it was a quarterback draw or a zone read, but Nordgren he's in the middle of the field, nobody around him. I think it had a chance to be about a 40-yard touchdown run, and then he inexplicably just dropped the ball, and he dribbled it, and it bounced right back to him, and it was weird. He eventually regained complete control, but he didn't score the touchdown, in part because he tried a Tim Hardaway crossover at the 15 and didn't make it in. Oh, but the offensive line is another area where there's angst. Every year there's angst about the offensive line, except this year. Say what you want to about Herb Hand, but Texas fans, and I think this is interesting, if you prove to Texas fans that you know what the fuck you're doing, Texas fans will give you the benefit of the doubt to some degree. I think they did it a year ago with Todd Orlando. Like, all of the questions that were facing the defense a year ago, the general attitude was Todd Orlando, he'll figure it out. And the offensive line had been so bad for a decade that Herb Hand came in year one and made them just pretty good. Like, I don't know that I would say they were, maybe by the end of the year they were good, but they were just kind of pretty good for most of the year. But pretty good was such a monumental step forward from blah. The Texas fans are like, Herb Hand will get it done. Now, they feel that way in part because they love them some Sam Cosmi. They know they just got a senior grad transfer who was one of the best interior linemen in the ACC. We know that Zach Shackelford is a guy that, however good we might or might not think he is, the Big 12 coaches/SID members voted him second team all Big 12 a year ago. Maybe that's a bit of an indictment on the quality of offensive linemen in the Big 12 last year, but it is what it is. It is what it is. He was second team. Sam Cosmi didn't even make second team all Big 12 a year ago by the coaches. Zach Shackelford did. So you've got him. Like, generally speaking, I think that there's enough coming back. The Texas fans feel pretty confident about that offensive line group, and that Herb Hand, Texas fans believe he's worth his weight in gold. There's no stress about that. This is a spring game where on Saturday we will arrive at the game, and whatever happens with the offensive line and the quarterback position, I just can't imagine there being any angst. Barring injuries, barring Sam Cosmi or Sam Ellinger being carted off the field on Saturday, there's almost nothing that could happen. If Sam Ellinger showed up on Saturday and threw 5 interceptions, the reaction would be, how about that defense? If there end up being 8 quarterback sacks on Saturday, I think the general perception will be, well, Herb Hand will have them ready to play by September. It's a fascinatingly different atmosphere that Texas finds itself getting ready for a season in. And I think it's healthy. I think that instead of ominous clouds and questions following a program for an entire year, like, they're given the benefit of the doubt in some really major areas. And I think it's allowing a lot of really good work to get done. And I think we arrive at a spring game on Saturday where we don't have to worry about what does it mean? God, how many times in the last decade have we gone to a spring football game and tried to parse out, like, the plays between the quarterbacks? Oh, Swoops was awful. Bouchel was great. It definitely means something. You know? Even a year ago, Sam versus Shane. Who looks good? Back and forth, back and forth. We've done it probably every year since 2010. In 2010, Garrett Gilbert was the star of the spring game. There was no competition for him at the starting spot. I look back at the post spring game remarks in 2010. One of the questions that was asked of Mack Brown directly after the spring game was whether Texas could win a national championship in 2010 with Garrett Gilbert. And Mack Brown was, yep, because I think he's got enough experience. You guys will hold 85% over my head for a decade. Well, those hadn't been that long, but I'm sure it will be. It's Austin. Like, you guys will hold things over my head. Garrett Gilbert is a perfect example. You guys hold Garrett Gilbert over my head. Because I said some crazy things, but I don't ever hear any of you hold that against Mac. And Mac said after the spring game that Texas could win a national championship in 2010. Not at the end of Garrett Gilbert's career, without him ever having a start. He was talking about Garrett Gilbert winning a national championship that season. You guys don't hold that against Mac. That should be on his tombstone. Just like we know 85% and It's Austin will be on mine. But let's talk about the spring game. Let's talk about storylines. And let's go position by position. I think when you look at the quarterback position, I don't think there's any negatives. If Casey Thompson doesn't look great on Saturday, I think that's somewhat expected. He's a redshirt freshman. He's never played in a game. He's up until this spring, he's got 14 practices under his belt where he's been getting a lot of reps. And I know that the general storyline on Thompson has been that he's having a good spring. I don't have any expectations. I go into the spring game thinking about Casey Thompson, and if there are positives to take out of his performance on Saturday, positives. There aren't a lot of negatives. If he throws four interceptions, all we're going to know is that he's not ready now. But we should already know that. I don't know anybody suggesting that Casey Thompson would be ready today to start, let's say, the LSU game. Any game, really. Nobody thinks he's there yet. We don't even know if he'll be there in 5 months. We don't know if he'll truly be ready yet. Probably won't be the kind of thing that we'll know about until he gets into a game. So I don't know that I go into Saturday thinking anything negative if he struggles. And the same thing with Rashawn Johnson. If there are positives, then fantastic. If there are negatives, expect it. It's just kind of the way I feel about the quarterback position. And it's an unbelievable position to be in, because imagine if Sam of last year, not last year in 2018, but the Sam of last spring, where it wasn't yet fully his job. Imagine the way we would treat a spring football if it had been him and Casey Thompson and Rashawn Johnson, and Sam wasn't the Sam that we know. I think the anxiety would exist. I think people would overreact. And I just don't think there's a reason for that. Not this year. I think the quarterback position is one. I'm not going to say I'm going to ignore, because I'm not going to ignore it, but I'll just go into the Saturday as it relates to the quarterback position with a completely open mind. Let's see what we see. Let's see where Casey Thompson's at. Let's see a little bit of Rashawn Johnson. But, you know, let's also keep in mind what Texas does have, what Texas and what it has and what it has proven on the field in the biggest of games. You think back to last year, Sam Ehlinger outperformed Kyler Murray in October. He outperformed Will Greer in November. He outperformed Jake Fromm in January. Monster games. The only big game last year where Sam Ehlinger wasn't the best quarterback on the field was in the Big 12 championship game, when Kyler Murray looked like the number one pick in the NFL draft. Other than that, in the other three biggest games of the season, Sam Ehlinger was the best quarterback on the field against some of the best quarterback play in the country. So that's the backdrop. I'm really excited to see the Texas running backs on Saturday. If you throw the skill position all in one group, I want to see, look, who doesn't want to see Jordan Whittington at this point? In fact, as I record this podcast, one of the things that the coordinator said to the media today was that Jordan Whittington, he's all that in a bag of chips. So Whittington and Keontae Ingram, which I think is a better 1-2 punch on paper than Trey Watson and Keontae Ingram, I want to see those guys. Basically, every receiver on campus I want to see to some degree. I want to see them all. I want to see Brew. I want to see what Malcolm Epps looks like. I want to see them all. Brandon Eagles, let them all catch passes. I think that I have said on the record numerous times that group right now, when Jake Smith and the rest of those guys are all together on the field in August, from that moment moving forward, the University of Texas will never have had a deeper, more highly valued in terms of recruiting rankings set of receivers on campus at one time at any point in its history. Five of the top, I think, nine receivers, and this does include Jordan Whittington, who is at running back, but he's still going to be on the field. Still, we talk about skill talent. But you think about, you know, Devin Duvernay was a top 50 national guy. Jake Smith, Brennan Eagles, Brew McCoy. We're not even counting the likes of Colin Johnson, who will probably be a first-team All Big 12 selection going into the season. It's a big time group, and I want to see all of those guys. Just put little stars next to every young receiver on campus. I want to see them all on Saturday. I mean, I think half the people showing up are showing up to see Brew McCoy and Jordan Whittington. And you know what, man, I'll raise my hand on that too. I think that if you're talking about things I want to see and things I want to write about in next week's 10 Thoughts from the Weekend, I think it's those two guys. Again, on the offensive line, it's about depth. It's about staying healthy, and it's about getting enough players that you've got six or seven you can play with. And the funny thing is, there's not a team in college football that doesn't have questions about depth on its offensive line. I've never covered a University of Texas football team. And then, now, there were years where Mack Brown at times would run out his second team offensive line and give them a series or two early in the season. But I can't remember a team in the history of the program, even that national championship team, where the depth behind the starters wasn't a significant drop-off. Like, this isn't the NFL. And no matter how good you recruit, it's hard to recruit at a level where you're 10 deep with good players. Texas needs six or seven. Six or seven allows you to withstand an injury or two, right? You need three tackles and you need four interior linemen. Or you take four tackles and three interior linemen, but then you're really shallow. You probably need three tackles, four interior linemen. It doesn't sound like a lot of wiggle room, but you're just not going to have it. It just doesn't exist in college football. Even Nick Saban at Alabama is worried that they don't have enough depth this year on the offensive line. Even Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma, a year ago, they had the best offensive line in the country. Four out of those five guys are gone. They've got to replace all their starters. Yeah, I would imagine Lincoln Riley's sitting around right now wondering, does he have enough depth? Like, I just think that's everybody. And I think every year we'll do that bit where we wonder whether or not, you know, what happens if there's an injury to Sam Cosmi? Like, every team in the country does that with their best offensive lineman. Because nobody is so deep along the offensive line that they could lose an All-American level player. And it'd be, oh, it's cool. We're good. Don't worry about it. The guy behind Sam Cosmi is better. Like, it just doesn't happen very often. And it doesn't happen in mass. Like, there may be a situation where the offensive lines have a Sam Cosmi, who's, you know, redshirt freshman. He's not starting ahead of the guy who's ahead of him. But there aren't five. At best, most programs have one guy on their second team offensive line that you could look at and go, in a few years, he's gonna be better than that guy. Like, it doesn't always happen that way. Usually, it just doesn't add up together in a way where that happens. When Justin Blaylock showed up in 2002, and that was a pretty good Texas offensive line when you stop to think about what was in that group in 2002. And yet, you know, he wasn't even on the two deep as a true freshman. They redshirted him. So you could look back and go, well, that 2002 offensive line, that was that group. Casey Studdard and Justin Blaylock were freshmen, but they all redshirted. So even in years where you could think about, like, what were the really good offensive linemen and when were they young and when did they show up? Rarely were they backups and ready to play. And I just think that's where Texas is with the offensive line. It's got an offensive line where their backups aren't ready to play for the most part. And one day they might be really good, but as it But as a problem, it's no bigger or smaller than anything anybody else faces. The issue is, can you get five really good ones? When we talk about Oklahoma's offensive line depth, or offensive line in general, when we say it was the best offensive line in the country, we don't count anything that happened after their starting five. So when we say Oklahoma had the best offensive line in the country, and when we say that, that means that every team in the country probably would have traded their offensive line for Oklahoma's offensive line. We're talking about the starters. We're talking about the guys that played and how they performed. And, you know, usually you start losing a couple of offensive linemen. Anybody in the country, you're probably not talking about a season that ends up being super successful. Because it just doesn't exist at this level in the way that we would all strive for it to, with keep bringing in recruits, keep bringing in recruits, stack them up, stack them up, stack them up. You can do things at wide receiver with depth that you just can't do with the offensive line. It's just harder. Meanwhile, over on the defensive side of the ball, I don't know what the hell to expect. It's the damnedest thing. We've reversed roles to the point where the offense at Texas, every layer of it, I'm giving benefit of the doubt to. I want to see the young talent. And I look at the defense, and that's where there are real jobs to be won, real jobs to be competed for at every level of the defense. And knowing that there's so much turnover, I think if you're a Texas fan, you don't, a good thing would occur if the Texas defense dominated the spring game. It'd be the best sign, I think, for 2019 Texas football, would be for us to walk out of that spring game going, they're damn good on defense. I thought we were going there to watch the offensive guys, but look at this defense. I don't expect that to happen. I have question marks about this Texas defensive line. I have question marks about a linebacker position that's got a bunch of guys on it with a bunch of talent, but very few guys that have ever harnessed that talent and produced in a way that would make you think, okay, well, they're not going to miss Malik Jefferson, or they're not going to miss Gary Johnson, who followed him. Like, I don't know that the next guy that's the third guy in that chain of linebackers, you know, is Joseph Asai really ready to be a difference maker? And what does the secondary look like if it doesn't have a pass rush in front of it? Like, there are all of these things with the Texas defense that I have question marks about. And I want to see Taquan Graham. And I want to see Keandre Coburn. And I want to see DeMarvion Overshown. Oh, all of us want to see that guy. But, like, we want to see these individual pieces. And I would tell people, don't freak out about the Texas defense. I think it would... the best thing that could happen would be for everyone, including the players and the coaches, on a larger than normal practice stage to see the Texas defense show real flashes. Hey, it's cool. It's cool. You know, I know there's a bunch of guys coming back. I mean, a bunch of turnover and, you know, starting positions still need to be determined, all this stuff, but it's okay. They're on it. I wonder if we leave the spring football game wondering to ourselves more, what's this defense going to be about? That's the question for me in this coming into this spring game. Do we exit the spring game on Saturday feeling like the defense is going to be cool? Or do we walk out of the spring game having the same amount of questions that we had before the spring started? And really and truly, we're just not going to know. You know, the defensive line is a question mark. The linebackers are a question mark. What it means for this secondary, you know, and we know that some of the big dogs won't be back in the back end of the secondary, so there's no real reason to freak out about that. But as a whole, as a unit, what are we going to see from this Texas defense? Will we see flashes that make us give them benefit of the doubt going into the season? Or are we going to turn our attention strongly coming out of the spring towards the defense, and where we live in a world where Todd Orlando gets benefit of the doubt? Maybe his talent won't. Maybe there will be real questions about, man, this defense has to be ready by week 2. This isn't a season where the first real game that matters isn't until October. This is a season where what happens at home against LSU will largely define like the narrative around this football team for all of 2019. It's a program that wants to think of itself as a potential playoff contender. Well, we're going to find out real quick in week two. And I think that sense of urgency that exists will create a sense of urgency coming out of the spring game. And whereas I don't really have any issues with the offense, barring injuries, I'm cool with the offense at every level. I think it's going to be more than fine. I don't know about the defense. I tend to think that I know. But I can't say that I know. I can't say that I know what Taquan Graham is. I can't say that I know what Malcolm Roach is. And the coaches can try to pump up Malcolm Roach all they want to. And I was a guy that coming into his sophomore year, I thought, well, coming out of his freshman season, I thought Malcolm Roach was going to be a legitimate Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year candidate. So nobody has jumped on the Malcolm Roach train as much as I've jumped on the Malcolm Roach train in terms of bold proclamations, but it's 2 years later. And the reality is Malcolm Roach hasn't been a plus player with his hand on the ground 2 years under Todd Orlando. And he has to be good this year. There's no like ifs, ands, or buts about it. He has to be great. He has to be productive. I don't know that he's capable. I don't know that that's in him. I don't know that that's in his locker. I think it is, but I don't know. And I feel like you can do that with just about every position on defense. We think we know, but we don't know. We know about BJ Foster. We know about Caden Stearns. We know about Brandon Jones. We don't know about much in that front seven. We just don't. And I think it would go. I think it would be if you're a Texas football fan, and you show up and there are two or three less touchdowns on the field on Saturday because great defensive plays are made by young defensive players that this team will be counting on, I think you should feel good about that. I think if Casey Thompson gets intercepted by Joseph Asai, I think you just focus on the good. Because it's funny, I go back and look at those old spring games from the last 20 years or so. And in the years where defensive plays were made, they're usually that are memorable. They're usually made by guys that end up playing in the NFL for a really, 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 really long time. In 2009, Colt McCoy got pick sixed in the spring game by a guy named Earl Thomas, who's pretty good. and it was foreshadowed for what Earl Thomas would be that season in 2009. Right, so two ways you, whoa, man, Colt threw another interception, although he didn't throw a lot in 2008. But you look at Earl Thomas and you go, well, okay. Nathan Vasher, big plays in spring games. Earl Thomas, big plays in spring games. Derek Johnson, big plays in spring games. That's what you want. I think more than anything, that if you could see, like a perfect spring game would just have a bevy of those young players on both sides of the ball making monstrous plays, but it doesn't always happen that way. I think I'm showing up to be entertained by the offense on Saturday, but it's the defense that if they could perform well in this atmosphere might be the best thing for the program. All right, look, on that note, I'm going to wrap this bad boy up. I promise, another OBP later this week. We'll probably do more spring football talk then, probably some recruiting, maybe an interview or two. Look, there's all kinds of things we've got planned in the next couple of weeks for the Yak here in this podcast. Stay tuned. I'll be bringing them to you later.